Imagine carrying a device in your pocket right now. You trust this device with your banking, your most private conversations, your precise location data.
Your encrypted work emails.
Exactly. You trust it completely. Now, imagine waking up to find out that a master key to that exact device, a key that bypasses every advanced security measure you rely on, has just been sold to the highest bidder on the digital black market.
It genuinely sounds like the cold open to a dystopian thriller, but as the intelligence drops from earlier this month confirm, it is very much reality.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are so glad you're joining us because we have a massive stack of material to get through today.
Yeah, a really dense stack.
We're looking at recent threat intelligence reports from Google, some really deep cybersecurity analyses, and official tech industry statements, all dropping in early March of 2026.
It's been a busy month.
It really has. And our mission for this deep dive is to break down the Coruna catastrophe. We're going to explore exactly how a $45 million United States intelligence tool became a weapon for global cybercriminals.
And we'll look at what this means for your personal privacy.
And most importantly, how you can navigate the fallout of this without feeling completely overwhelmed. Okay, let's unpack this.
We really do need to unpack it carefully because the scale of this threat is, I mean, it's hard to overstate. The toolkit we are talking about is codenamed Coruna.
Coruna.
Right. It was originally developed by a private U.S. security firm called Grayshift. And the initial intent behind Coruna, as stated in their government contract, was purely to advance national security. It was built specifically for U.S. intelligence agencies to hack the iPhones of suspected terrorists and foreign spies.
I have to jump in right there, actually, because when I was reading through the background on this, I kept getting stuck on that $45 million contract.
Yeah, it's a big number.
Well, I mean, $45 million feels like a literal drop in the bucket for the U.S. military or the intelligence community. Why outsource the development of a master key to a private firm like Grayshift instead of just building it in-house, like at the NSA?
It's a great question, and it really speaks to how the modern cyber warfare ecosystem operates today. The intelligence community often relies on private contractors for a few reasons. First, hyper-specialization. Firms like Grayshift dedicate their entire existence to cracking mobile operating systems.
That's all they do.
Exactly. Second, and perhaps more importantly, it offers a layer of plausible deniability. Right? If an in-house NSA tool leaks, the blowback is direct and devastating. But if a contractor's tool leaks, the government can distance itself, to a degree, from the failure in operational security.
Which is exactly what we're seeing play out now. But before we get to the actual leak itself, let's talk about what Grayshift actually built.
Yeah.
Because tools don't have a moral compass, right? They just execute code.
Precisely. To understand the gravity of Coruna falling into the wrong hands, you really have to look at its technical weight. Coruna isn't just a simple piece of malware or some phishing script. It's a highly advanced modular exploit toolkit that contains 23 distinct zero-day vulnerabilities. 23. And these vulnerabilities aren't just localized to an old, unsupported operating system. They affect iOS 13 all the way through iOS 17.2.
23 zero days just sitting there. I mean, for anyone listening who keeps up with tech, you know how incredibly rare and valuable even a single zero day is on the exploit
Oh,
market?
absolutely. Millions of dollars for just one.
Right. So having 23 bundled into one package means virtually every single iPhone sold in the past 5 years has been walking around with these invisible back doors.
That's exactly it. And the versatility of this toolkit is what makes it so devastating. It's essentially a Swiss Army knife for digital espionage. The intelligence reports detail five distinct attack vectors that Coruna uses to breach a device. Each one is tailored for a completely different operational scenario.
I was looking at the success rates for those vectors, and they are honestly terrifying. Walk us through how this thing actually gets into a phone.
Well, the most reliable method is physical access. If an operative physically gets their hands on the device, Coruna has a 99% success rate of bypassing the lock screen and encrypting.
Okay, 99%.
Yeah. Then there is the malicious link method, which sits at an 87% success rate.
The classic spear phishing approach.
Right. But it gets more insidious from there. There's a Wi-Fi proximity attack, which succeeds 72% of the time.
And that's the one that made me want to throw my phone in the ocean. Just to clarify, that means an attacker doesn't need my phone number or my Apple ID. They just need to be sitting in the same coffee shop as me, connected to the same public Wi-Fi network, and they can push the exploit to my device.
That is exactly what it means. It exploits vulnerabilities in how the device handshakes with the local network. They also have an App Store Trojan method. That's where they hide the payload in what looks like a benign app, which has a 65% success rate.
Still pretty high.
It is. But while those are all highly concerning, the fifth method is the one that has the entire cybersecurity industry on maximum alert right now. What's fascinating here is the zero-click iMessage attack.
The truly invisible threat.
Absolutely. It has a 95% success rate. Mm. And here's why it shifts the entire paradigm of mobile security. It requires absolutely zero interaction from the victim.
Nothing.
Nothing. You don't have to click a link. You don't have to download an app. You don't even have to look at your screen. The attacker simply sends a maliciously crafted text to your iMessage. The moment the protocol receives and processes that message in the background, the phone is instantly infected.
That's terrifying.
And the message can even be programmed to delete itself before you ever get a notification.
And once it's in, it's basically game over. I mean, from what I read, after that zero-click payload drops, Karuna gains unfettered root-level access to the device. We're talking about bypassing all of Apple's advanced sandboxing.
Every single layer.
The attacker gets your messages, call logs, location history, passwords, and your encrypted data. They can secretly activate your microphone and camera without triggering that little green or orange indicator light at the top of your screen. The phone basically belongs to the attacker at that point.
Which brings us to the inevitable multi-million-dollar question. How does a tool this powerful, built under a classified national security contract, end up in the wild?
Right. And the timeline uncovered by Google Threat Intelligence reads exactly like a spy movie. They followed the digital breadcrumbs, and the journey of this code is wild. It starts with the development phase, taking place between 2023 and 2024 at Grayshift. But then things go off the rails in late 2025.
Yes, the initial leak. And the intelligence community is still trying to piece together exactly how it happened. The current assessment suggests it was either a disgruntled employee looking for a payout or an external infiltrator who managed to gain deep, persistent access inside Grayshift's network.
Right.
But whoever it was, they managed to exfiltrate Karuna's source code directly from the secured servers. And they didn't just dump it on a public forum. They sold it directly to APT29.
The infamous Russian espionage group.
The very same. The architects behind the massive SolarWinds supply chain attack a few years back.
So now, a bespoke U.S. intelligence tool is sitting on Russian servers. But they didn't hold on to it for long, did they?
No, they treated it like a highly lucrative asset.
Yeah.
By early 2026, APT29 decides to flip the tool. They sell Karuna to a highly professional, state-sponsored hacking collective known as Volt Typhoon.
And cybersecurity analysts have widely linked Volt Typhoon to the Chinese government.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the price tag for this transaction was an estimated $15 million, paid entirely in Bitcoin.
A $15 million digital handoff. I was actually laughing a bit when I read that. Well, not at the situation, but just imagining the sheer stress of executing a $15 million Bitcoin transfer on the dark web. You're dodging international intelligence agencies, and at the same time, you're probably sweating over whether the crypto market is going to crash by 20% before the block confirms.
I'm sure it was a very tense few minutes for whoever was holding those wallet keys. But jokes aside, the moment Volt Typhoon acquired the code, the entire landscape changed. We are now in March 2026, and Volt Typhoon has taken this tool and weaponized it for widespread, systematic attacks. This has predictably set off a map of geopolitical chessboard of finger-pointing and emergency investigations.
Right, because nobody wants to be left holding the bag on this.
Exactly. The U.S. government mobilized rapidly. The FBI launched an extensive investigation into Grayshift to find the original source of the leak. And the Department of Justice announced it will file formal indictments against known members of Volt Typhoon.
And Congress is getting involved, too.
Oh, yeah. Congress is dragging private security contractors in for emergency hearings, demanding to know how their operational security failed so spectacularly.
But internationally, it's a completely different story. It's a classic geopolitical standoff. The U.S. points the finger at Beijing and Moscow, and they predictably call it baseless political theater. A spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry explicitly called the accusations a smear campaign. They suggested America should focus on its own poor security instead of blaming others.
Which is a very standard diplomatic deflection.
Right. And Russia has similarly brushed off any involvement, despite Google Threat Intelligence mapping APT29's role as the middleman.
It perfectly highlights the immense friction that occurs when cyber weapons cross borders, because attributing in a cyber attack with 100% certainty is notoriously difficult. It creates a permanent fog of denial and accusation. It makes global accountability almost impossible to enforce.
Meanwhile, while the diplomats are arguing, real people are dealing with the fallout. and the numbers we have so far are grim. As of March 7, 2026, the security firm iVerify confirmed that 42,000 devices have been infected with Karuna.
And we have to emphasize, for the sake of accuracy, that 42,000 is merely the floor, not the ceiling.
Right, because that's just what's been scanned.
Exactly. That number only represents the devices that have actively been scanned by iVerify's specific software. Given the zero-click nature of the exploit, the true number of infected phones globally is likely exponentially higher.
Now, I'm assuming this wasn't a spray-and-pray malware campaign, right? They didn't just blast this out to millions of random phone numbers hoping to catch people.
Not at all. The geographic and demographic breakdown is very revealing here. This was precise, targeted espionage. 44% of the confirmed victims, that's about 18,500 people, are located in the United States. And the primary targets aren't everyday citizens. They are federal government officials, defense contractors, and Fortune 500 executives.
So they are going after the high-value targets. What about the rest of the globe?
Europe makes up 29%, around 12,000 victims, heavily focused on prominent politicians, regulators, and investigative journalists. The Middle East accounts for 17%, primarily human rights activists and dissidents. Asia makes up 7%. Mostly targeting strategic business competitors, with a final 3% categorized as miscellaneous. This targeting profile aligns perfectly with the known operational goals of a group like Volt Typhoon. They are using their $15 million investment to systematically monitor individuals holding significant political or economic influence.
Here's where it gets really interesting. There's a specific example of this targeting in the intelligence drop that just blew my mind. A United States senator who actively sits on the Intelligence Committee had their personal iPhone infected with Karuna.
Yeah, that was a shocking detail.
Because of that zero-click exploit, the attackers had completely undetected access to all of their secure communications, emails, and physical location for 6 entire months.
Half a year of an adversary having a live microphone and a real-time transcript of a U.S. Intelligence Committee member's life. When you extrapolate that kind of access across thousands of officials and executives globally, the national security implications are just profound.
Which brings us to the tech giant caught in the middle of this absolute mess, Apple. For years, Apple has built its entire brand identity around privacy and security. Their marketing is practically centered on the idea that an iPhone is an impenetrable fortress. But according to the reports, Apple was completely blind to this. They had no idea Karuna, or these 23 zero days, even existed until March 4.
And they didn't even discover it internally. Google Threat Intelligence had to notify them.
Wow.
Now, to Apple's credit, once they were informed, their security teams went into an immediate all-hands-on-deck crisis mode. Within 48 hours, they managed to patch all 23 vulnerabilities and push out an emergency update, iOS 17.4.1. They also released a free integrated scanning tool so users could check if their hardware had been compromised.
But I have to play devil's advocate here, because the critics are out in full force, and they have a point. If iOS is as tightly controlled and secure as Apple claims, how do 23 massive architectural holes go unnoticed by their internal security audits for years? Why did a rival company have to tap them on the shoulder and say, "Hey, your house is on fire"?
It's a valid criticism, and Apple is definitely feeling the heat right now. Craig Federighi, their senior vice president of software engineering, issued a very carefully worded statement defending the company. He noted that these vulnerabilities were highly sophisticated and developed by state actors with unlimited resources, basically reiterating Apple's commitment to security while shifting the blame to the sheer power of the attackers.
It's fair that Grayshift had state-sponsored budgets, but Apple's rivals are absolutely not letting a good crisis go to waste. I saw Google running aggressive new ad campaigns highlighting how Android's Play Protect and their advanced sandboxing architecture offer superior dynamic security. Samsung is heavily touting its Knox security framework, too. It's a total marketing feeding frenzy.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, though, what we are really looking at isn't just an Apple problem or an Android problem. It is an industry-wide philosophical crisis. In cybersecurity circles, this is known as the dual-use problem.
The dual-use problem. Right.
The core of the issue is a fundamental question. Is it even possible to create an offensive cyber capability that is powerful enough to be useful for intelligence gathering, but safe enough that it won't cause global devastation when, not if, but when, it inevitably leaks?
There was a great quote in the analysis from renowned cybersecurity expert Bruce Schneier that sums up the reality of this. He said, "The dual-use problem is that you can't build a tool that only good guys can use. If the tool exists, it eventually falls into bad guys' hands."
And the historical record aggressively backs up his assertion.
Right.
We keep learning this lesson the hard way. Think back to 2017. Highly classified proprietary hacking tools developed by the NSA leaked to the public via a group called the Shadow Brokers.
You remember that?
Those exact tools were rapidly repurposed by cybercriminals to create the WannaCry ransomware. And that went on to cause billions of dollars in damage globally, shutting down hospital networks and critical logistics infrastructure.
The reports also point to the Pegasus spyware from 2019 developed by Israel's NSO group. It's the exact same story. It was intended for tracking terrorists and heavy-hitting criminals, but it ended up being used by authoritarian regimes to spy on journalists and human rights activists worldwide. It reminds me of the parallels we saw during the great ChatGPT exodus a while back. It's this recurring theme that whenever immensely powerful, paradigm-shifting technology is concentrated and then slips its leash, the consequences are incredibly hard to contain.
It creates a seemingly unsolvable loop for policymakers. Proponents of these intelligence programs argue that governments absolutely need these tools to fight modern terrorism and counter-espionage.
Yep.
You simply cannot fight a digital war with analog weapons.
Right, that makes sense.
But privacy advocates and technologists argue that the sheer inevitability of a leak means the inherent systemic risk to the global population vastly outweighs the localized, temporary benefits of possessing the tool in the first place.
So what does this all mean? We've talked about global espionage, $15 million Bitcoin transactions, and the philosophical paradox of dual-use technology. But if you are listening to this right now, looking at the device sitting on your desk, you need to know what to do next. Why should you care about a tool built for spies, and what should you be doing today to protect yourself?
You should care, because as Corinna proves, the bespoke tools used to target billionaires and senators today become the automated tools used to target everyday citizens tomorrow. Once the code is out there, it gets reverse engineered, commoditized, and deployed at scale.
That's the scary part.
It is. Fortunately, there's a very clear, actionable checklist for digital safety in the wake of this specific leak.
Let's talk through it because it's actually pretty straightforward. Step one, and this is the absolute most critical thing, update your device immediately. Go to settings, then general, then software update. If you are not running iOS 17.4.1 or higher, you need to pull over, connect to a network, and install that update right now. Do not hit remind me later.
Step two is to verify your current status. You need to scan your device. Apple has released a free iOS security check tool integrated into their ecosystem, and third-party platforms like iVerify also offer reliable detection for the Karuna footprint. It takes only a few minutes to run.
Now, step three is what the cybersecurity analysts call the nuclear option. If you scan your device and find out it actually is infected, there is no quick antivirus fix for this. You have to do a complete hard factory reset of the phone.
It's painful but necessary.
And here is the brutal part. If you restore your phone from a cloud backup, you have to be absolutely 100% certain that the backup itself was created before the initial infection occurred. If you aren't sure, you have to start from scratch. Otherwise, you are just reinstalling the persistence mechanisms of the malware.
Step four is specifically for individuals who fall into those high-risk demographics we discussed earlier. So journalists, political activists, C-suite executives. Apple offers a feature called lockdown mode.
I've heard of that.
It is a severe setting. It fundamentally alters how the phone operates. It disables complex message attachments, restricts certain web browsing features, and blocks wired connections. It makes the phone significantly less smart, but it drastically reduces the attack surface for complex zero-click exploits like Karuna.
And finally, step five is just maintaining baseline vigilance. Even with your phone fully updated against these 23 specific zero days, new ones are always being discovered. Be hyper aware of suspicious links or out of character messages, even from people you know. And make sure two-factor authentication is enabled on all your critical accounts, your banking, email, cloud storage. If your device is compromised in the future, you want the attackers to hit a massive cryptographic wall before they can actually access your digital life.
To synthesize the core lessons from all this intelligence, the era of assuming any single piece of consumer hardware is an impenetrable fortress is officially over. Karuna has shattered that illusion entirely.
It really has.
Moving forward, the future of cybersecurity is going to demand a radical shift in cooperation. Tech companies are going to have to vastly expand their bug bounty programs to outbid the black market, and they'll need to share threat intelligence across brand lines much faster. Furthermore, there will likely be a massive push for stricter congressional oversight regarding how private security contractors handle the digital weapons they build.
And for you, the listener, your personal defense ultimately relies on building simple, consistent habits. It's about remembering that while Karuna represents a massive multinational failure of operational security, your defense against it right now comes down to not ignoring that little software update notification on your screen.
Exactly. But stepping back, this entire catastrophe leaves us with a truly provocative question about the future of our privacy. We've established that these military-grade hacking tools will inevitably and consistently leak to common cybercriminals. History has just proven it again with Karuna.
Right.
So are we approaching a future where everyday citizens will have to permanently live their digital lives in lockdown mode? Will we willingly sacrifice the smart and convenient features of our devices just to maintain a basic expectation of privacy?
That is a heavy, incredibly complex question to mull over the next time you hear about a major data breach. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the Karuna catastrophe. We hope you feel a little more informed, a little more prepared, and a lot more secure. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and please go update your devices. We'll catch you next time.